You could win recordings of all 10 Making the Case conferences and recordings of more than 50 hymns featuring the Lutheran Public Radio Choir. Here's how. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. with Apple Podcasts. Copy and paste the text of your review and send it to talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll announce the winners on February 1st. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. with Apple Podcasts and send your review to talkback@issuesetc.org. Well, you've all seen the pictures of President Biden sitting either at the Resolute desk or in the White House formal dining room. He has a stack of executive orders next to him in both of these versions. And in and among those executive orders, a flurry of them in his first day in office, he signed one called Executive Order on Preventing and Combating Discrimination on the Basis of Gender Identity or Sexual Orientation. What does this order do? And what does it signal about the president, the new president's direction when it comes to what he calls LGBTQ discrimination? Joining us to talk about the president's executive order, Dr. Ryan Anderson. He's senior research fellow in American Principles and Public Policy at the Heritage Foundation. On February 1st, he will become president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, and author of several books, including Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, and When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Dr. Anderson, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Does President Biden have the law on his side when it comes to this particular executive order?
No, not really. I mean, he's citing a Supreme Court case as cover for this. He's citing the Bostock decision that was decided this past summer, in which Justice Gorsuch and, unfortunately, a majority of the Supreme Court said that our employment laws that ban discrimination on the basis of sex in some instances cover sexual orientation and gender identity. But that didn't therefore get applied to our education civil rights laws or our healthcare laws, where there might be some serious reasons why we take our bodily existence as male and female seriously, right? The reason that we have separate boys and girls bathrooms and locker rooms at schools, the reason that we have different boys and girls athletic teams, the reason why we have patient-specific male and female medicine is precisely because our bodies matter there in a way that the court, unfortunately, has said they don't matter when it comes to employment law. And so what Biden is trying to do is use the cover of a bad Supreme Court decision to say, every time the word sex appears in our federal civil rights law, it now means sexual orientation and gender identity. And therefore, everything that the left has been asking for on transgender issues, they're now going to get. And he does this on the very same day that he gives a inaugural address about how he's going to unite the nation and heal the nation and bring us together. He does probably one of the most divisive things you could do while espousing the rhetoric of unity.
Did the lawmakers who crafted and passed the 1964 Civil Rights Act that Bostock dealt with so poorly, did they have any inkling of President Biden's definition of sex in mind at all?
Of course not. I mean, no one until maybe a decade ago in the mainstream and maybe even, you know, two decades before that within like the fringe gender theorists were thinking that sex and gender identity were these two radically different concepts where you would now say that sex is merely, quote, assigned at birth, and that your gender identity is an inner sense of gender that therefore determines what your sex is. These are radical progressive theories that really even only entered the mainstream of the Democratic Party in the very last year of the Obama administration. Right? I mean, like, the conversation that we had throughout the first two decades of the 2000s were about the LGB part of the acronym, not the T part of the acronym. And it wasn't until 2016 that President Obama issued a transgender mandate on both healthcare and schools. And now in 2021, on the first day in office, Biden has given us that all across our civil rights laws. The people who passed the Civil Rights Act of 64, the people who passed Title IX in 1972, they said you have to treat men and women equally. You have to treat boys and girls equally. And what they meant by men and women and boys and girls were people who were biological organisms, right? We're incarnate beings. We're embodied people, not people who identify as boys need to be treated as if they actually are boys, or people who identify as girls, right? High school boys who identify as girls. The civil rights laws were not passed to allow those boys who identify as girls into the girls' locker room and to play on the girls' sports team. This is turning the civil rights laws upside down.
What does it tell you about the future days of a Biden administration with regard to these issues that he did decide to do this on the day of his inauguration and was very clear leading up to his inauguration that he would also pursue passage of the so-called Equality Act?
I mean, it shows you who he's beholden to. When you look at especially something like the Equality Act, we should take a look at when it's introduced, what its number is. Last year, it was H.R. 5. And normally, the first 10 bills, so H.R. 1, H.R. 2, up through H.R. 10, are a signal of, you know, what the Speaker of the House and when the presidents of the same party in conjunction with the president view as their priorities. And frequently, it's because there's a constituency that wants those things to be priorities. And so I think what this signals is that there were special interest groups, in this case, LGBT special interest groups, who were committed to getting Biden elected, and then they were committed to him then returning the favor by advancing their agenda. And it's important to point out that the special interest groups, the activist groups, do not speak for all people who identify as LGBT. Andrew Sullivan today wrote a very sensible column explaining just the extremism of what Biden has done. And obviously, you know, he's a gay man. And there are lots of people who are transgender that think, but look, you shouldn't be doing this to kids, or you shouldn't be doing this when it comes to sports or when it comes to homeless shelters. I mean, there are lots of nuanced compromise positions that Biden entirely avoided. And he went for the most radically extreme position.
You were quoted in the Washington Post saying that the executive order threatens the privacy and safety of women. How so, Dr. Anderson?
Let me give you an example. A law like this was in place in Anchorage, Alaska, and the Hope Center, the homeless shelter for battered women and for other homeless women. They had an intoxicated man show up who identified as a woman, wanting to stay at the woman's shelter. They called up a taxi cab, they paid the cab fare, and they sent him to a men's shelter, and then they were sued for discrimination. Now, women in a shelter like this, they're not staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Our listeners should see this as, like, imagine a gymnasium where there is a cot every 3 or 4 feet. And these women deserve privacy and safety from people with male bodies. And I don't care how they identify, right? If you have a male body and you identify as a woman or not, doesn't make a difference to these women, many of whom have been sex trafficked, they've been battered, they've been victimized already. They need a safe place they can go to. That's why we have women-only places, men-only places. We sometimes have co-educational and co-ed spaces. Sometimes we have sex-specific places where we need a certain amount of privacy, a certain amount of safety from the other sex. And we're just asking for trouble if, for example, we turn high school locker rooms into a gender identity-based access rather than a biological sex-based access.
So can an executive order like this be challenged in the courts?
Not only can it, but it will be. And I highly suspect right now that there are half a dozen public interest law firms on the conservative side of the spectrum that are getting ready to file the paperwork. And they're going to be representing high school athletes who have to compete in unfair athletic competitions, you know, girls who are losing competitions to boys who identify as girls. They're going to be representing high school students who don't want someone of the opposite biological sex in their private space. They're going to be representing doctors and physicians who don't want to have to perform medical procedures to transition someone. And in none of these cases are the concerns, you know, the way the left talks about this is, oh, you don't believe in equality, or, oh, you're discriminating. No, in each and every one of these cases, it's about a privacy concern, it's about a fairness and competition concern, or it's about a good medicine concern, right? Many physicians simply think it's bad medicine to give a teenage girl testosterone. And so it's also really disconcerting that Biden uses the language of discrimination and civil rights to render one side of a disagreement about medicine as if they're bigoted discriminators. Right? When you're using the civil rights law like this, you have to realize that you're now stigmatizing a certain segment of this discussion as if they're the functional and now legal equivalent of Jim Crow.
It's a fool's errand, perhaps, but do we need a better refined definition of discrimination? Because we discriminate all the time to good ends and for good purposes. And what we're talking here is about a bad kind of discrimination.
That's right. I mean, it used to be part of common English language that you would say you have a discriminating palate or he has discriminating taste, something like that. When the law uses discrimination, they're assuming that you're already at the point of unjust discrimination, right? Invidious discrimination, something like that. And the problem here is that not every disagreement is unjust discrimination. As in, you know, I use the phrase, not every disagreement is discrimination, because I think in the popular ear, the word discrimination just has that unjust aspect built right into it for today's language. And we need to be able to disagree without saying that, you know, one side of a disagreement is violating civil rights, is engaged in bigotry. And President Biden had an opportunity to lead on this, and instead he went and he placated the base. And it's disappointing.
In that vein, Dr. Anderson, many have noted the rapidity with which President Biden moved leftward, radically leftward, as he got closer to the White House. Why did that happen? Why did he choose to placate that particular sector of his base and not, I think, probably the vast majority of more reasonable Americans on issues like this?
It's an impossible question for me to answer only because, you know, I've never talked to him about this, right? So I don't know. And I could speculate. And the speculation here would just be not particularly about President Biden, but about political representatives in general, which is that sometimes special interests, various lobbying groups, various financial contributors count for more than ordinary voters. I don't know if that happened here or not, but this is a common phenomenon that political scientists have well documented, that money speaks and that campaign contributions speak and things like that. The other thing, though, because I think this isn't just that, is also that sometimes woke ideology, that you don't want to be left behind, that, you know, there's a fear that, you know, you need to be on the cutting edge. You don't want to be viewed as, oh, you know, he's stuck in a bygone era, and where progressives are today is more moving forward. I don't know, though. Like I said, you know, I can only speculate, but I do know that this isn't good for the country.
Is the silver lining that executive orders being what they are, it would require nothing more than the stroke of another president's pen to at least temporarily reverse things? I know that you've made the point many times with regard to President Trump's pen that it was not a rewind, but just a pause.
That's correct. So 4 years from now, which means we're going to have to live through this for 4 years, and there are going to be lawsuits going on for 4 years. 4 years from now, a different presidential administration could undo these policies. That won't rewind the 4 years that have been lost through all this litigation and through all the substantive problems that causes. And not only that, but Congress could also act, not our current Congress, because I, you know, so long as the Speaker of the House is of the same party as the president, I don't think they're going to be challenging him on this. But if the election 2 years from now, power was to shift, you could see a Republican Congress passing a law that specifies that the word sex does not mean gender identity. And the president's executive authority is limited by legislative authority. And these are the checks and the balances. And the other balance, the other check and balance is the court. So there's a chance that, you know, the court could rule and say, look, this executive order violates the privacy rights of girls, violates the equality rights of female athletes. It violates the religious liberty rights of doctors. So there are other checks that could be placed. We don't have to wait 4 years. There'll be some legislative possibilities in 2 years, perhaps, and there will be legal options immediately.
Finally, President Biden, before taking office, picked Dr. Rachel Levine, as the news reports, transgender woman, as assistant health secretary. What is your reaction to that?
It makes me question whether Dr. Levine was picked based on the merits of expertise. There seems to be no particular expertise here in epidemiology or responses to pandemics or something like that, which you might think would be relevant for the deputy secretary of HHS, given the moment that we're in. Or was this pick made as part of a political message that HHS was now going to be fully on board with some of the transgender medicine agenda, and so that we would see the Department of Health and Human Services trying to do what it can to advance a certain viewpoint about transgender medicine. That's what I would be concerned about. The concern would be that we're going to see regulations coming out of HHS that would be mandating transition procedures and prohibiting the good therapy that helps people feel comfortable in their own bodies. That's what I would keep an eye out for.
Dr. Ryan Anderson is Senior Research Fellow in American Principles and Public Policy at the Heritage Foundation. On February 1st, he will become president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, and author of several books, including Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, and When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Dr. Anderson, thank you very much for the interview, and congratulations on your new position with the Ethics and Public Policy Center.
Thank you. And just so you know and your listeners know, even in this new role, I'll still be able to be a guest on this program. I'm still happy to come on whenever you need me, and I'll continue doing this work, you know, work on marriage, work on sexuality, work on religious liberty. I'll just be changing some institutional affiliations, but not giving up the fight.
And we will be happy to have you on as often as you are available. Thank you very much, Dr. Anderson.
Yep. Thank you.
Well, on this Friday afternoon, January the 22nd, when we come back from the break, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We got our four soundbites ready to go for you. We're going to play them, and all you need to do is listen. And after you've heard all four soundbites, we do need to hear from you. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Your votes will determine which soundbite is Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week next. You could win recordings of all 10 Making the Case conferences and recordings of more than 50 hymns featuring the Lutheran Public Radio Choir. Here's how. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. with Apple Podcasts. Copy and paste the text of your review and send it to talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll announce the winners on February 1st. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. with Apple Podcasts. And send your review to talkback@issuesetc.org.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star, shine with a bright light.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Fornication, that is, sexual intercourse between persons not married to each other, is strictly forbidden by the Scriptures. St. Paul sternly warned the Corinthians, "Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality will inherit the kingdom of God." Thus wrote David Ramirez in his article, "Do Not Be Deceived," in the January issue of the Lutheran Witness, Chaste and Decent Life. To read the entire issue on how to live a chaste and decent life, pick up your copy of the Lutheran Witness today, cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Is it hard? Yes. Will it challenge you? Absolutely. Is it a blessing from God for you and those you will serve? Without question.
Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The pastoral ministry is all of these things, and that's why Concordia Theological Seminary exists, to form servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Men from all over the world with a variety of unique backgrounds come to our campus to receive faithful training that will equip them for the challenging but blessed work of serving as pastors in Christ's church.
Learn more about studying for the vocation of pastor at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Christ-Centered Worship, Confessional Theology, Lutheran Community, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.